Before we dive into the case for this episode, I just wanted to acknowledge the elephant in the room. The show has been on hiatus for a minute, and I sincerely apologize for that. I've recently made a big move from Detroit to New York, and so I guess you can say I've been a little distracted. But nevertheless, I'm happy to be here and happy you're too. Now, let's get on with the show. In the early hours of the morning of February 14th, 2000, in Shelby, North Carolina, a 9-year-old girl living in a 2-bedroom duplex apartment with her family wakes up, gets dressed, shoves on her book bag, and heads out of the home into a manic thunderstorm. 24 years later, many still beg the question, what happened to this little girl? What happened to Asha Degree? I'm Kendall Hudson, and this is When the Light Goes Out. Asha Degree was born on August 5th, 1990 in Shelby, North Carolina, to parents Harold Degree and Aquila Degree, with an older brother by the name of O'Brien Degree. Now, I wanted to give a quick depiction of the area that this case takes place around because it plays such a vital role to the story. Shelby, North Carolina, according to niche.com, has a population of roughly 21,000 people, and so it's not a very big town. And it's described as having a sparse suburban feel with lots of parks and forest areas. So it is one of those places that many would describe as a quiet town where nothing ever happened. Now, Asha and her older brother, O'Brien, from all accounts, had a very close sibling bond. Asha looked up to her big brother. They both had a love for basketball at the time and played the sport as well. Little Asha just genuinely had a great home life. She was a very intelligent little girl, she was very active, and she always was participating at school. She loved math and science and was often known as such a standout student that she was always being picked as a student of the week. Asha was all around a very bright and athletic girl that was also known to be very shy and cautious at times, but sensible. So all around, she just excelled in school and was a star point guard for her school's basketball team, the Little Bulldogs. In the year 2000, Asha was around the age of 9 years old and had been a fourth grader at Burns Middle School in Lawndale, North Carolina. So let's jump into the timeline of how things went leading up to Asha's disappearance. February 11th, 2000 was a Friday and there was a 3-day weekend approaching for the two siblings being Asha and her older brother. They both had attended Burns Middle School, and so Friday night, Asha had stayed over her aunt's house after Friday evening's basketball practice had ended. February 12, 2000, the evening of, Asha and her team, the Little Bulldogs, played their first basketball match of the season at Burns Middle School. At the game, Asha had played point guard, and in a statement later given from the FBI, Asha had fouled out, resulting in her own team losing a point. So this was the team's first loss of the season, which really kind of annoyed Asha. For a good reason, Asha was a pretty competitive girl and she was very disappointed, but her mother, Aquila, came and calmed her down. Some other teammates were also there to cheer her up, and by all accounts, not long after, maybe a good 5 minutes later, Asha's coach and mother recounted seeing her in good spirits. She was happy, cheering on her big brother who was about to start his basketball match, and not long after hers, later that night, the Little Bulldogs all had a sleepover at one of the teammates' homes. So jumping into the next day, February 13th, Asha was picked up by her parents. They brought her back home so they could all get ready for church in Waco, North Carolina at the Nacadania Missionary Baptist Church, and it was a pretty typical day all around. Asha seemed to have mostly gotten over what had happened the previous day with her team's loss. It was also almost Valentine's Day, so she had gotten to see her grandmother that gave her some candy, which may have helped lift her spirits, and after church, the family went to Asha's aunt's home that afternoon for dinner. After the morning of these events, Asha had been feeling a little tired, and I mean, she went to a summer party the previous night, the girls may have stayed up later than their usual bedtime, and then Asha had that morning full of activities. So Asha had taken a nap from 6:30 p.m. till around 8:30 p.m. in the room that she had shared with her big brother, O'Brien. Now, there was an obnoxiously loud thunderstorm that had started while Asha had been napping, and it is unclear if the thunderstorm woke her up or she had just been up already, but it being in her room alone did scare her a bit because Asha really did not like thunderstorms. So she decided to join her family in the living room for some TV time after feeling wide awake. About 30 minutes later, around 9 p.m, the DeGree family's power goes out due to a car hitting a power line down the street from their home. So Harold and Aquila send the two siblings off to bed for the night, and the power is not restored until between midnight and 12:30 a.m. Not long after the power is restored, Harold does a quick check on the siblings in the shared room to make sure they were all right. It is assumed that he went back downstairs to watch television right after. An hour or so later, and Harold does one last final check on the kids before heading to bed. So, pretty normal night by all accounts, beyond the power going out. And I remember my mom always going to consistently check on me and my brother to make sure we were not only okay, but actually asleep. And I know it is kind of a parent thing, and parents just want to make sure their kids are safe and okay. So I get wanting to repeatedly check on your babies before turning in for the night. And one point that I really want to revisit that is important to this case is the power did come back on around 12:30 a.m. But the thunderstorm and heavy downpour persisted throughout the night, and again, Asha was terrified of these storms. Now, I do not know if O'Brien, Asha's brother, was or was not a super light sleeper, but he did claim to have seen his sister get up once or twice that night. He heard her bed creaking once, which kind of woke him up, as she went to use the restroom, and then he heard her get back in bed. Allegedly, he heard the bed squeak a second time a little while later, but I am assuming he may have thought that it was the storm outside that was bothering Asha and that she just really couldn't sleep because of that, which is understandable. So the morning comes and Asha's mother, Quila, woke up early, earlier than she usually did, to give Asha and her brother a wake-up call to bathe since they didn't the night before. There had been a busy day planned ahead, and Aquila really wanted to get a head start, and it was Valentine's Day. They had planned some events, and it was also Aquila and Harold's 11th wedding anniversary. Aquila goes to the kids' bedroom to wake them up, but to her surprise, O'Brien was still in bed, but Asha had not been. Aquila immediately checked everywhere in the house, in the living room, bathrooms, the family's car, around the property, but there had been no sign of Asha anywhere. Aquila did call nearby family members to see if she had maybe gone to see them for some weird reason, but there was still no sign of Asha. After finding that no one had known of Asha's whereabouts, Aquila immediately called the police, and a full search was in effect before 8 a.m. that day. I cannot fathom how horrific that morning was for Asha's mother not finding her in bed, then assuming, okay, there might be a good reason for this. Maybe for some reason she was already up somewhere in the house, and then finding out that your child is nowhere to be found is just horrifying. I also think about how sad it is that Asha went missing at all, but of all days on Valentine's Day and then also on her parents' wedding anniversary. It is theorized that 10-year-old Asha had left her home sometime between 2:30 and 3:30 a.m. I say this because there are witness sightings that claim to have seen Asha on the morning of February 14th, 2000, between 3:30 a.m. and 4:15 a.m., but I will get to the witness statements in just a bit. Items that were missing of Asha's that were most likely taken with her were Asha's black book bag that she used to go to school with, a black small purse with Tweety Bird on the front, black pants with a white stripe down the sides of them, a long sleeve white t-shirt with purple letters on the front, a red cotton vest with black trim, a long sleeve black and white t-shirt, and there is a possibility that she also took family photos, a house key, and her basketball uniform with her. So this wasn't obviously normal because, first of all, it was storming that night and Asha had hated storms. Second, Asha was a 9-year-old girl leaving her home in the middle of the night. And thirdly, it seemed that she had left as if she was packing to leave to go over someone's home that she knew. At least in my eyes, it seemed that way, but this case gets so much stranger. When officers arrived at the DeGree family home, they found no evidence of forced entry, and officers asked if Asha may have been in trouble or mad about something. Aquila and Harold said absolutely not. She was a very happy child that loved her family. She had a great bond with everyone in her life, never showed any problems to her parents, and yeah, she had recently lost her first basketball game, but as kids do, she seemed to have gotten over it like it never happened. There was absolutely no reason that Asha's parents were to suggest that she may have run away, and again, she was 9. It is uncommon for a 9-year-old to decide to just up and leave for no reason in the middle of the night. And I'll sound like a broken record, but once again, where is a 9-year-old going to go, and especially at these hours? I'm sure we, and when I say we, I mean all of you listening and myself included, have all had some moments where we have thought, something isn't going my way, this sucks, or your guardian has you in a timeout and you've thought, oh, I am definitely getting out of this house. Though, did you ever really run away? Even if you made it down the block, I am sure at this age you would have turned right back around rethinking your actions. Well, at least I did. I remember there had been a time when I was maybe 14 or 15, which is still older than the age Asha had been, when I was ready to walk out. I had a plan to pack a bag and walk a couple miles down the road to my grandmother's house from my parents' house over some silly chore I didn't want to do, and I was still so nervous to make that move, so it is bizarre and concerning to me that this little girl willingly decided to walk out of her home with no clear reason, but let's keep going. So after Aquila retells the events leading up to Asha's disappearance and the police begin their search, a witness that night, some truck driver, reported to authorities that they had seen what looked like a young African-American girl walking south on Highway 18, which was north of Shelby, North Carolina. Now, I did Google map this out from Asha's home on Outcrest Drive. She would have walked maybe 5 minutes to the end of her block. At the end of her block, it seemed that Asha had turned left walking down another block until she got to Highway NC18, and then headed south down a very long stretch of road. From what I found, there had been no street posts down that road, so it was very hard to see. There had been a truck driver that claimed after driving past and seeing what he thought he had seen being a little girl, he tried turning around. Mack trucks aren't the easiest to simply turn around like an average-sized vehicle. You must watch for your ongoing traffic, slowly reverse, and avoid hitting objects, so it definitely most likely took a minute. This truck driver did eventually get his 10-wheeler turned around to investigate why this little girl was walking alone in the middle of the night in what was, at this point, a storm that was sort of dying down but nevertheless still harsh. According to this witness, he had parked and got off the truck and tried to get her attention, which must have startled her because, as this witness claims, she started running into the direction of the woods. Using the Google Maps street view from around the area where this happened, it shows that the surrounding area from NC18's stretch of road was a pretty vacant area other than a couple of homes a half mile between one another. The other side of the street is completely wooded area. Of course, we asked, or at least I asked, had the truck driver had been questioned himself at all? Only because it seemed that he had seen her last, but he quickly was dismissed as a suspect, and there were actually a couple other passerbys that testified seeing what the truck driver had described, including a motorist that had witnessed physically seeing a little girl running directly into the woods. One description that the witness statements also claimed that gave me more chills was that it didn't appear that the girl that they had seen had any layers on. No coat or jacket, hat, gloves, or any type of material for warmth, which I just find so even more bizarre because, child or not, it is a human instinct to want to stay warm. Yet she was seen dressed as if the weather was a nice brisk 80 degrees. While doing some research, I listened to a couple different other podcasts to see what they had to say about this case, and one that really stood out was the Uncover podcast. In it, there are three hosts that discuss this case, and they really were weighing in on the thought that it seemed like Asha had been expecting to get picked up. This theory is one I will talk more about after discussing the foundation of this case, but just hold on to that theory throughout this case because it is a strong one. February 15th, one day after Asha's disappearance, police receive another lead. This is from the Debbie Turner upholstery shop sitting along the road where Asha had been last seen, maybe a mile or two away. The owner calls in to authorities notifying them that they have found candy wrappers, a pencil, and a Mickey Mouse bow tie just outside of the owner's tool shed on the business's property, which a year later would have been confirmed to have belonged to Asha. Now, at the time of Asha's disappearance, a lot of things are going on, and it is a relatively small town, so I can only imagine everyone is trying to chip into this investigation the best they can. August of 2001, a little over a year later, more evidence of Asha's had been found. This was in Burke County when a construction worker had been digging and making a path for a new home. What had been found was quickly identified as Asha's backpack, being that her name was written on it. The backpack was buried a couple feet above ground. It was 30 miles away from NC-18 where Asha was reportedly last seen. The bag was found double wrapped in a black garbage bag, and some of the found contents were also very interesting. Two contents have been found that were not exposed to the public's knowledge until October of 2018. The two contents that were eventually made known were a red and white New Kids on the Block short sleeve t-shirt and a Mick Elagott's Pool by Dr. Seuss book. Asha's family confirmed to authorities that neither of those belonged to Asha, even though they had been found inside of her book bag. One interesting tidbit that the Uncover podcast pointed out is the Dr. Seuss book did belong to Asha's school's library. This was not linked, of course, until decades later, so when a news publication found this out and asked the school about this interesting lead, the school responded in saying that they sadly could not reference who checked out that book so far back into the past. So we may never know if that was a book that Asha did check out, but her parents just never saw it in her possession, or if that book was in the hands of an adult at the school that Asha also attended. In addition, according to sources, the bag had been found very close to the residence of a registered sex offender. Now, the book bag was taken to a federal testing facility in Quantico, Virginia. I'm assuming the contents as well, but I cannot find that to be factual. But no trace of DNA had been found from that book bag. At least it hasn't been made public knowledge. The cops may know more, but could be keeping a lot of information close to the chest, even today. As for the sex offender, they did check on that lead, but they found that the individual had no link to this case and was dropped as a suspect. So let's discuss some of the even stranger things that were found in this case. So there is an article that had been published on February 24th, 2000, 11 days after Asha's disappearance, by the Charlotte Observer that speaks on the entire case, and right next to that article, there is a divided section with another photo of an African-American girl about Asha's age, and the heading reads, quote, "Do you know who this girl is?" unquote. The photo that is shown in the newspaper clipping, again, is not Asha, although the photo had been strangely found with Asha's belongings. So, very strange note, but there had been no further knowledge of who that girl was and why that photo was found with Asha's belongings, but a very important note to make. Let's keep going. The theory was there a designated spot that Asha was going to? This entire case is truly abnormal in a lot of ways. Not that others aren't, but there is a lot of holes in this case that just really makes this case so difficult to solve. I cannot be sure, but there is always a possibility that someone may have grabbed her and then planted her belongings closer to home to make it seem as if she was still in that vicinity. It isn't the most solid theory, but it is a theory I can believe, and I also believe whoever this was knew Asha as well. I also believe that there were other victims taken by the same abductor of Asha DeGree. It would explain the random miscellaneous items found in Asha's book bag. Maybe they were trophies or some items of other victims. I wondered if this was someone from Asha's school or church. They were the two main places Asha had been most, and it hurts to admit, but Maybe this person had a secret bond with Asha. Clearly, if this is the case, then the monster that had taken Asha had experience in grooming other kids, so it would make it very easy to take advantage of Asha's trust. In 2004, a tip had led investigators to look for evidence in the area that she had been last reportedly seen, to which bones had been found, but ended up being identified as animal bones. More recently, as of May 2016, there had been an anonymous tip that FBI released stating that this anonymous person had seen Asha the night of her disappearance. This source had claimed to have seen Asha get into a vehicle which may have been described as a green, more like a seafoam green colored Lincoln Continental Mark IV or a Ford Thunderbird with rusted wheel wells. Police had posted photos of similar looking cars that match this description, but nothing has come of that lead to this day. In 2020, news press The Shelby Star had received a letter from an unidentified man that claimed to have no knowledge that Asha had been killed and where her body was buried. The police found that the man that made these claims was already serving a prison sentence for sexual assault against minors and had a long history of giving false allegations, to which police deemed the lead to be no more than meritless. Although today, Asha DeGree's case remains unsolved, investigators as recently as 2024 have made it clear that Asha's case remains active and open. Cleveland County Detective Tim Adams, leading the ongoing investigation, says, quote, "This is something we really feel like can be solved, and we are determined to solve it," unquote. With advances in technology, Cleveland County Sheriff's Office continues to focus on finding out what happened to Asha DeGree the night she disappeared, and with over 700 tips, there is a possibility that investigators may know more than the public may be aware of. Also in 2020, Asha's mother had came forward in believing Asha is still very much alive. She was stated from a video shared from FBI stating, quote, "We're hoping and we're praying that she's had a halfway decent life anyway, even though we didn't get to raise her. We've missed everything, but I don't care. If she walked in that door right now, I wouldn't care what I missed. All I want to do is see her," unquote. If you have any information of the whereabouts and disappearance of Asha DeGree, I urge you to reach out to the Cleveland Sheriff's Office, 704-484-4822. You can also call the FBI at 1-800-CALL-FBI or tips.fbi.gov. As of the date of this recording, there is a reward of up to $45,000. All of this will go into the show notes. That brings us to the end of this ongoing and very tragic case. Please do not forget to follow the show on the platform that you are listening from, tell others about the show, and you can even follow on the show's Instagram at WTLGOpodcast. I thank you all for tuning in to this episode, and I hope to have you back when the light goes out.